If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Today we're going to visit with an old friend of ours. He's here to talk to us about his life behind the scenes and working hands-on as an exorcist. He's retired at Worldwide Recruiting Program for the Order of Exorcists. He is an investigation and an assessment team member of Order of Exorcists. He was the chief exorcist, and he is Archbishop Ron File. We've visited with him numerous times through the years on our show. He is now easing out of the limelight, out of the struggle of everyday battles, and turning it over to others that are ready to pick up that mantle and carry on in their stead. Ron, it's good to catch up with you again, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Dave. I appreciate it.
Well, you've come a long way. I mean, boy, you've fought some battles doing what you do. And for our listeners that are new, let's just start kind of at the beginning a little bit and give them a cursory glance at your life. What got you involved in the exorcism part of your work?
Well, first of all, I have to say I feel that I was called by God many years ago to do just this, that is to fight the demonic and participate in this battle of good versus evil. As a result, in the early 70s, I was recruited, and then I received holy orders, became a Catholic priest, and then about 4 or 5 years after that, I was approached by one of my mentors, who asked if I would be interested in a ministry that most priests, bishops, clergymen would rather not even deal with. And that is in regards to the ministry of exorcism. So for 4 years, I was under the mentorship of three of my former bishops who all passed away. And again, this was in the 70s. So I assisted as the assistant to the exorcist for about 4 years. And then at that point, I was basically ready, if you will, and I was elected as an exorcist in the old Roman Catholic Church. At that point, I started to participate and respond to people who had issues regarding demonic episodes. And as a result, over the years, I've done many of such rituals, along with the company of other clergy, and then throughout the years we developed, and when I say we, I suppose I should say I, developed some programs that would help to make an accurate assessment in regards to someone who says or demonstrates various symptoms of demonic either oppression or possession. We also experienced a lot of what's referred to as demonic infestations, and this was another thing that was very common, still is. And as a result, we've been able to approach it on a very analytical basis with three physicians, two of them psychiatrists. So when the assessment would be done, the investigators would submit their report along with video and psychological profiles and also health examinations, anything that would help us make an evaluation as to whether or not we are dealing with someone who is truly possessed or if it's some type of medical condition that would mimic the symptoms of demonic possession. So over the years, we've been pretty busy. I've been doing this for a long time, Dave.
How many medical maladies are there that actually mimic things like a true exorcism or possession, I should say?
What we do is we look at the person's medical background. If there's a chemical imbalance, then there's a several psychosis that would mimic such things. The epileptic seizures, for example, they appear to be something that would be physically impossible for the individual to do in regards to their movements. They could literally throw out their various joints, arms, legs, and so on. They could twist themselves in unbelievable. I mean, you know, anything that you've seen in regards to a professional carnival person who's able to do and make all these various movements, that's something you would see. It would be like very, it would be very frightening if you weren't aware that it could be something other than demonic possession. We have an amazing body, and the brain that we have is capable of doing so many things. When there's a chemical imbalance, there's certain movements that will respond to the signals from the brain, and it will actually mimic unbelievable what would also appear to be supernatural, very supernatural episodes. But getting back to the actual demonic behavior, if it's a true demonic, there'll be things that could not be mimicked by someone who has psychosis. And that would be everything from levitation, and even the immediate environment will actually manifest certain supernatural things, things that are unexplainable, things that would actually defy the laws of gravity. And when this happens, then you know that there's some type of happening occurring. In physics, they have a very common term, which is cause and effect. Everything in life has an effect. There's any type of movement in life, there is an effect. There's a reason. There's something that allows the manipulation of whatever from point A to point B. As a result, we have to acknowledge the fact that there are other things other than demonic forces. There are other things in the world that could mimic such things, but not to rule out the demonic entity, because demonic oppression, for example, that occurs and it affects the mind of the individual. And when that happens, we believe that the point of entry is always the mind. And it's a result of some type of harassment by outside forces, outside dark forces, the demonic force, if you will. And as a result, a person could be influenced to behave in a certain way and to respond in a certain way. And when that occurs, then there's a major disturbance within that space where you would see a person, perhaps maybe display supernatural strength and other things such as to be so perceptive in terms of what's happening in the lives of people around them. And so they would state who they are, even though they may be strangers. They would actually identify the person as if they know the person intimately and all their secrets. And so for some reason, the person who is actually expressing the manifestation of a demonic force within them, they have that ability to actually look at someone and identify and call out all the negative things in that person's life and make it known. The person would be, of course, extremely intimidated, and therefore, whatever their role is within the team, they would either succumb to all of this massive battery of accusations and so on, and which would be made public. The person would probably just simply fall apart, maybe run out of the room. A lot of things have happened. We've had one person who had actually had a heart attack in this whole process, and we had to call the ambulance. We had to call the medical teams to come out and rescue this person. Unfortunately, this person died on the way to the hospital.
Now, was this this was a person that was afflicted? This was a person dealing with the possession?
No. This is just a person. The actual relationship was the mother of the victim, and she was so close to as to everything that was going on, and in the middle of the ritual, she just dropped to the floor, and she had a massive heart attack at that point. And the paramedics, when they arrived, they worked on her, and then they transported her to the County General Hospital in Los Angeles. Unfortunately, she didn't make it. Now, these type of things occur because the demonic can get into the minds of people, not only the victim, but people that are around the victim. People within the household can be affected as a result of this type of dark behavior. And it's quite interesting.
Have you seen, you know, I know there's a lot more talk about it now because of the paranormal being such an outed interest around the world. Do you believe that this outing has created more issues with the paranormal, with possession, whether it's spirit possession, demonic possession, whatever you want to refer to it as, or do you think it's always steady, it's always pretty active, and it's just now being reported more?
I've always said this, that cases of these natures of demonic possession and so on, and demonic issues in general, I've always said that the cases have been probably the same, about the same amount of cases, you know, based on the population of the city or the state or the country. It's always been the same. The only thing difference is that our reporting system is a lot more advanced. We have the internet. We could see things around the world in real time, and as a result, we become more aware that these things are actually happening. So, to say that the cases have shot up, now, I don't believe that would be very accurate. I would say that our ability to see what's happening around the world because of our technology, that we can see things that are actually happening. Third world countries, for example, we never knew this, but in third world countries, there's so much demonic possession, so many people who are possessed by demons because of the pagan rituals that are still being performed, the blood sacrifices that are still being performed. The demonic has and is attracted to that type of environment, and understand the main purpose for the demonic to even be in existence is to break us down. And the third world countries, unfortunately, they don't have the means to fight in this battle of good versus evil. It's a very real scenario. Some people can't even acknowledge the fact that it exists. Like for those of us who have had a brush with it, it's something that would probably touch everyone in one point in time within their lifespan. And I only say that because there are so many things that we have access to that can open our minds and explore the dark possibilities of the reality of evil. And as I said, the internet is one of those big things that we have access to. And since we have access to, we could actually become more knowledgeable in these areas. And that gets pretty scary because it's my firm belief is the more you understand And the more you acknowledge in regards to evil and the demonic and all of these things actually existing and cohabitating in your plane of existence, the more you know about that, the more you become aware of, and as you become more aware, then obviously you become more open to Satan's influence. And so it's a very real scenario for people who have seen things and who have taken the time to do the research and unfortunately taken in too much information that may not only corrupt their very soul and minds, but also it will affect their physical environment by knowing these incredible and real things. So
do you believe that evil is evil a being or beings, or is evil just a force? Like wind and rain evil. And snow and ice. I mean, is it just a force of nature?
No, I believe it's more than that. Evil has to exist in order for the good in the world to exist. They both have to cohabitate. Evil is more of a nature than an entity. It's the nature of man can produce certain dark, evil things that could manifest within their lives, and it would affect the lives of people around them. It could be very contagious. Evil is a force of nature, perhaps. Maybe that could be articulated in that fashion. However, I believe that evil is the product, obviously, of Satan. And again, based on your belief system, but when Lucifer was thrown out of heaven and one third of the angels were thrown out with him, or he took all of them, those fallen angels became demons. And the whole purpose is so they could assault God's creation. And that would be us, human beings. The demonic, evil Satan would, his whole purpose is to try to assault the Almighty God by damaging and trying to disrupt and divert his creation, the human beings. So we are in this world, and there's actually a battle happening, and it's just beyond our awareness, where it's, I described it somehow like under, or rather on the other side of the veil. And the other side of the veil is just beyond our tuning. We can't see what's actually going on, but it's going on even while we talk. It's going on within our own environment. And as a result, we're influenced by these things. We're influenced by these impressions. I had a conversation just the other day about this very thing. And atheists, for example, they don't have to believe in anything. But the truth of the matter is, they don't have to. It's the reality of demonic forces that could influence their lives. And the atheists will just brush it off as, well, it was just an unfortunate event. Or it was just a part of those unfortunate things that happen in life. And they just simply accept it. And the greatest task that Satan has been so successful in is called deception. That's what he wants to do. He wants to make this whole mission and this whole perception into a very deceptive scenario. So you won't even know that you're being corrupt, that you're being directed or misdirected, or you're following something that could be very destructive in one's life. There are people that have committed suicide as a result of having a demonic oppression. Now, the demonic will not, and the dark forces will not kill you, per se, but they will persuade you that this is part of a natural phenomenon, and you need to take the next step, whether it's committing suicide or doing some heinous thing in life. The way it's designed is that Satan and the demonic forces will manipulate your thoughts, where you start accepting it as being the norm. And when that occurs, then all kinds of things will happen. I think the old cliche is all hell will break loose.
Right. The the power of a true possession, when somebody has given over to this energy, I understand that we need to give it some kind of permission to do so. And I've been thrown by the fact that, well, how do children become possessed? And I was alarmed to find that it's, in most cases, it's because of something their parents did. Since they have authority over the child, they can make these deals on the child's behalf. If we truly have free will and the child did not make that conscious choice, doesn't that seem to fly in the face of what we understand regarding the demonic and how they can attach?
You know, there's a lot of different scenarios that you could discuss, different types of hypothesis in regards to how a person is affected by the demonic. And invitation, of course, is definitely one of those many ways that most people accept as being the cause of allowing the demonic in. But however, there are other things. I talked about demonic oppression, where a person who thinks that it's all their idea, that there are no outside forces that are influencing them, and as a result, they will behave in a certain fashion, and maybe even be self-destructive in that fashion. If that occurs, then it could be explained, and it also could be acknowledged that this possibly could have been a demonic oppression, where the person was convinced that what he was doing or what action they were taking was all part of the normal acceptance in life, and it was just something that they had to become part of and participate, because it's a normal thing. Again, it's all about deception. It's all about the demonic hiding itself in plain sight. And as a result, anyone, and I mean anyone, clergy as well, can fall into the trap. They could trip over this dark, invisible premise that I'm referring to. There have been people that we know that have been very holy and very pious. Even Mother Teresa at one point was the people around her were convinced that she had a demonic possession. And it was Pope John II who actually performed a ritual of exorcism on her. And that's Mother Teresa. You know, she's the, you know, everyone, you know, Catholic or not, or considered her a saint. But yet she was afflicted, if you will. And then I think about the people who have actually experienced and people who have witnessed stigmata, which is something that once you see, witness, or understand, you think to yourself, well, is this even possible? And of course, you know what stigmata is,
right. That's where you're taking on the sores, the visual sores of the crucifixion and the thorn, the crown of thorns on the forehead. People will show these afflictions, like bleeding from their side, bleeding from their palms or wrists or ankles, and bleeding from the forehead as though they've got the thorny crown placed on there as well. Is that the proper explanation?
Yes,
of stigmata?
Very good. That's exactly it. The people who experience these things are said to be very, very, very devoted and religious people. So much so that these things manifest. The marks of Christ will manifest, and as a result, they will bleed at certain times of the day or year. And there's quite a few famous people who actually had the marks of stigmata. And, you know, and even St. Francis, we all know who St. Francis is. He had stigmata. Padre Pio had stigmata. And that's one of the main reasons why his hands were always wrapped in cloth, because he would bleed. And people would see the blood running from his hands. And as a result, there have been many cases and documented cases of genuine stigmata, and it's quite interesting. This all falls under the area of the spiritual realm that we exist in. You know, we participate in this thing we call life. And as a result, there are all kinds of things that could take place. Talking about the openness of the demonic and who is a target, well, the answer would be just about anyone. Anyone that is able to think reasonably and has an intelligent and has a willingness to learn, and that's in our character, that's in our human nature. We are compelled to learn as much as we possibly can, whether you're conscious of the fact or not. We're always reading, we're always researching, we're always looking, we're always interacting with other people, and as a result, that information comes in, and it makes us more accessible to things that could happen in life. And of course, I'm referring to the dark forces of life. The scripture tells us and shows that all these things have happened through our Lord Jesus Christ. He was the chief exorcist of not only that time, of all time. As a result, he had the ability to just be present, and people around him would be healed. People who openly reached out would be healed. People who made any type of request. And then you have the people who were demonically possessed, and they knew the presence and the strength of Christ. And as a result, things started to take place, as everything is recorded in all these various historical episodes that took place a couple of thousand years ago. And it's interesting. The people who actually are true and have a calling to do this type of ministry, they understand that the spotlight is the last thing that they should seek. That's why I've always said that you will never really see a true exorcism take place, because it's a very personal affair. It's a very, very
right.
It's at a point where the person is down and not only down at the lowest point of their life, but things are interfering with their very existence. And who would want that type of condition exposed or publicized? No one. We have
Can I ask one thing, Ron? Kind of when we were talking a little bit earlier about children being afflicted with this because their parents have authority over them and can use them as a vessel or give unto them. If you are called in to do battle with a demon like that, do you actually hold any cards in that kind of deal? Or because the parents can simply call upon the demon again and replace it? Or once you get done doing an exorcism, have you pretty much signed, sealed, and delivered and kept that kid or that person from being susceptible to that negativity again?
Well, first of all, let me say that anything and everything is possible when you come to the demonic. When you approach such a case, you don't take it on face value. You don't take it for what they're telling you is taking place. You have to do your own research on the individual. If the child is born and with some type of mental issue or if he was physically handicapped in certain ways, then an evaluation would have to be made on this to rule everything out. If the parents are there and they're practicing in the occult and doing all Satan worshiping and all this other stuff, the odds are they're not going to call an organization such as ours for help when things get out of hand. They will probably seek someone who has the same belief system, and they would seek their help. So it's very rare, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I mean, it has happened in the past, but it's very rare. It's like, and again, I was discussing this the other day, out of 1,000 genuine cases or genuine people that are requesting services for a demonic investigation and assessment, out of 1,000 cases, I could probably tell you that there's maybe 2, maybe 3 cases that are actually genuine, where things are moving, people are being levitated, where the maggots are falling down from the ceilings, human waste is coming down, raining down on the walls, when the smell of burning flesh is in the room, and all things that are happening, and all things that you could possibly imagine as being just
horrible, just nasty, will take place in that type of episode. And as I said, these are all done behind closed doors. People who are involved, the family members, the victim, of course, they're going through this. This is the lowest part of their life. This stuff can't be, you know, exploited, you know, and they do not want it to go out in regards to what exactly took place. But we do have some, and when I say we, I'm talking about the public, the laity. They do have some sense as to what's really going on if they're open enough to believe that such things are possible. The movie The Exorcist, when that came out, that was very, very scary. And you could ask anyone who is a clergy, true clergy appointed exorcist, he will tell you that those things and more can happen. And in one of the cases that I was involved in, I could remember seeing the transformation of a person's whole face and gender change right before my very eyes. Now, you see, everything changed.
Wait. Face and gender? So they've gone from man to woman or woman to man?
Exactly. They would change, and sometimes they'll even change into what would be resembled as a snake or some kind of serpent, their body, their form. And this is what you'd be seeing. And of course, it's all a deception. It's all a deception to throw you off, throw the exorcists and the people who are assisting, to throw them off and divert their attention to something else. Because the closer you get to, quote-unquote, evict the demonic force within that person, the more it's going to try to hide and deceive everyone in the room. It's going to try to divert your attention so you won't follow through and evict the demonic entity. And so this is all happening all at once. Everyone, their attention is piqued, their emotions are heightened, and everyone is in anticipation for something to happen that will be traumatic, not only to the victim, but to everyone who witnesses as to the actual ritual and what's to take place after that.
Is there a real danger involved for you, the clergy, during these moments of true possession? Or are you really shielded from the negativity? I've heard it both sides. I've heard of some priests and religious leaders that have been tossed around like a rag doll, and others say that they're very proficient. They go in and get the job done, and that's it. Where do you fall on the spectrum? Have you kind of crossed both sides of that boundary?
No, actually, I'll tell you that most of that information is given out to the entertainment community. And it is said and to believe to be entertainment for people who spend lots of money to see these programs, these shows, these movies, and so on. It's all an entertainment thing. The reality is everyone, and I mean everyone from the clergy down to the laity who's one of the investigators, everyone is open and can be. It's open season for the demonic. Demonic will do whatever it can to distract you, to possibly have you and your mental stability questioned from within. As a result, all these things could take place. Now, can a person be hurt has it happened? Of course it has happened. Those things are true. And I think you know my story. A few years ago, I did an exorcism, and I was physically attacked. I think you know the story. And as a result, I was placed in the hospital. I was in the hospital intensive care for 30 days. And
For our listeners that are not familiar with this story, tell me about who was afflicted. How did you get involved, and how did it end up putting you in the hospital?
Okay. I'll take it from the beginning, and I'll try to make it all sound like it's all ties together, because it does. Sometimes it's very hard to articulate these things, because anything that you experience in this nature is very it's very traumatic, especially for the exorcist and everyone who is present. We were filming a documentary. This was a few years back, and we had 9 people in the room. We were called, and our organization, such as other ministries such as ours, We don't look for the victims. They look for us. They seek our services. So we were contacted, and this family was in a city, which I'm not going to mention. And as a result, we did our diligence in regards to making an assessment, doing a pre-interview, doing some psychological evaluations, and having psychiatrists give their interpretations based on their findings. Then my job was to see the physical evidence, the physical manifestations that that a person may be going through at that particular time, as well as examining the family members and things. After all that's done, we decided to take a film crew, and they were going to do a documentary. Now, understand, faces were blurred, and so identities were not revealed. So we have 9 people, and they were outlined in the room. I was in the center, and I was doing a ritual. At the middle of my prayer, I felt a physical object, like a 2x4. Being swung and struck on my left side, and I felt it 3 times. It was like bang, bang, and bang. And this was an invisible entity. In the meantime, the cameraman is filming this, and he's totally unaware, but his arm from the wrist down to his elbow all of a sudden the skin started to separate, and the blood started to come down. So he was actually, and he didn't even know what was happening because he was filming this. And so as a result, I'll get back to him in just a second.
Oh, my God,
As this is happening to him, and even prior to that, I left out a few things where the power for the camera equipment and the sound equipment that kept going off and all that. But that's pretty normal in terms of anything in this type of situation. So as I was struck 3 solid times, the wind was knocked out of me. I barely could breathe. I was really struggling to just inhale and exhale, and I was just sweating, and it was just incredible. I was going through all these changes. I pushed myself physically, and I pushed myself mentally, and I held tight to my inner belief system, and I continued the ritual, and we were successful. We were successful, and as a result, the cameraman, somewhere between when all this was happening, realized that his whole arm was actually open. It was as if he was cut with a razor blade from his wrist all the way down to his elbow. Of course, he was rushed to the emergency room. He had stitches, and 200 stitches or something in his arm, just for being there and filming this episode that was happening. Everyone in the room felt the heaviness. The air in the room was so thick that everyone had a hard time just breathing. And not only that, but when you're having a hard time breathing and your oxygen is not flowing as smooth as it should be, your thought process starts changing and starts rambling, and people, become very much mentally unaware as to what's actually taking place. So these are all things that will happen, within that environment. Okay, so I'm on the way home. Okay, we've already done the ritual. We were successful. We only had, I think we only had 3 injuries, and I was one of the people who...
That's successful. Injured, is that the defining line of success? We only had 3 injuries. Only 3 people were injured this time.
Well, everything has a price, okay? There's a price to everything you do in life. And when we are talking about this type of scenario, definitely there's always a price that has to be paid. And sometimes that price is paid by the exorcist and his assistants. So 3 of us were injured, and I was one of the 3. I went home. I had still a hard time breathing. I called my family physician. He suggested I come in and to be examined, which I did. And then he ordered some chest x-rays and told me to go home. So I did. I went home. And meantime, a day passed, and I was having such a hard time breathing. My side was starting to really, I started really feeling the pain radiating from my side. The doctor's office called me immediately, like a day after, and said to me, you have to go to the emergency room immediately. And that's all they said. So I just jumped in the car and I drove myself to the emergency room. And I was admitted into the hospital. And I had three surgeries. They found a sack of blood, which contained 2 liters of blood in the sack. 2 liters of blood. And it was wrapped around and close to my heart.
Wow.
On my left side where I was struck. Now, this the team of doctors, they were like totally coming up with all kinds of things that could possibly be the case. To this day, they have no idea how I succumbed to that type of injury because it's totally unusual. I mean, whoever ever heard of a sack of blood pressing up against your heart on your left side? It's just not, you know, it's not very common. So as
right. Now,
result,
did you explain to them how did you explain to them how you got into this predicament?
No. And the reason for there's a couple of reasons. Number one, there's a confidentiality. If I would say something, there would be probably a lot of attention on everything that took place in regards to the family that we have just left. Okay, so that's confidentiality, number one. Number two, I'm already admitted into a medical facility. If I was to tell them what I believe actually happened, they'd probably transfer me to a mental institution. So sometimes you have to kind of suppress some of the things that may take place. And it's interesting. It's really, I would say, almost say comical, the way the medical community, the Western medicine anyway, the way they approach things when they don't actually have a clear diagnosis, what they do is they start this guessing game, and then they decide to give you all types of medications. And I wind up taking 60 different types of medications I had to take every day for 6 months. Every day for 6 months. I was in the hospital for 30 days. I had 3 operations, and I was finally released after 30 days. I was in isolation for 2 weeks because they had no idea what was happening. One physician said, well, it's probably TB. Obviously, that wasn't the case. Or it's probably something that we just don't understand. And as a result, we have to put him in isolation. So I was in isolation for 2 weeks. And then after 2 weeks, I was placed in a regular room. It was quite an experience. To say the least, I almost lost my life. I should have died in that whole process. For some reason, I hung in for like the 3 days before I actually was admitted into the hospital. But I should have died. That is a real scenario. The person, the cameraman who had his arm split open, he has now a scar. And as to the details, as to what he actually experienced would be pretty fuzzy because of this defense mechanism that we have in our brain. And it's, what it does, it's referred to as repression. It represses all the unpleasant memories, all the trauma events that we have in life. In order for us to survive and move on, you know, we have to have this mechanism that's built within ourselves in order to move on. If you were to question him now, he would probably point to the scar and say, oh, this happened on the job, and ask, well, do you recall when it happened? And he would probably say no, because, as I said, this is more than a physical type of manifestation taking place, but it's also a mental type of notion that's going on. Think of all the emotions, all the excitement, all the fear, all the anticipation, all that, and all those emotions being processed at one time. It would drive anyone completely crazy, you know, if you don't have a true perspective as to what's going on. As for me, and after taking all those medications, every medication you take has a side effect. This is one thing about Western medicine. You know, the doctors, they have this thing called practice. They practice medicine. And I think they're still practicing because, you know, let's face it, they don't have all the answers, unfortunately. Right. So they guess. They give you an educated guess based on past cases. And if there are no past cases that they could reference to, then guess what? You become the very first guinea pig, and they start throwing all this medication at you. Well, it's true. Just one medication, it's possible to have side effects. Just imagine 60 different medications. So I had all types of side effects. As a result, I've lost the ability to hear. I started having ringings in my ears, and then over the years it got worse. My hearing ability started to diminish. As a direct result of the side effects of the medication I was taking, and the indirect but somehow connected to the demonic, because this was all caused by my presence being at the place where I was required to go and to basically look at this individual and look past the flesh, but see the person or the demonic entity that was inside this person. And to do that, it takes a lot of preparation. Of course, the fasting for 3 days, the constant meditation before the actual event takes place. That's all a given. That's exactly what an exorcist has to do.
What does the fasting do, Ron? A lot of people don't understand that. Yeah, what good is fasting? I understand the meditation and prayer, but what...
Your attention. Okay, it brings your attention and your awareness to a physical need. We are all addicted to this substance called food. And when we're deprived of such things, our minds start wandering and we have to focus in on something. So what it does, it helps you sharpen your senses, the fasting. For this main purpose, that is. And when you do that, it becomes very effective. You get yourself physically, mentally, and spiritually prepared for what you're about to face. And you never really know what's going to happen until it happens. So the whole key thing is you have to be prepared for anything. And so when that occurs, unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there who call themselves, maybe they buy a mail order ordination, and they give themselves a title as an exorcist, and they will go out and whatever their motives are, it could all backfire on them and the person that they're trying to help. Reason being is, I would never approve an exorcism unless I knew that the person was actually having and experiencing a demonic issue. If there was any question at all, we would not do an exorcism. Reason being, if it was some type of chemical imbalance, mental issue, then if we're feeding into their psychosis, they could actually be driven to suicide or self-termination by just having someone support their delusion. So there's a lot of reasons why an exorcism is not done unless you actually know beyond a shadow of a doubt that what you're dealing with is a true demonic nature.
Chief Exorcist Archbishop Ron File is our guest this evening. We have to take a quick break. We'll come back and hear more about the calling and the battles to overthrow evil. And how hard is that? What goes on? What are some of the most chilling tales that he's had to deal with? And do demons reoccur? Will he see the same demonic entities from time to time pop up in different parts of the United States and around the world? We'll discuss that and more right here on the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. We are talking with Archbishop Ron File and talking about the life of an exorcist. What is this calling and why? Why do they do this work? Why is this work even here? Why do we have to be afflicted with the demonic realm? We're talking about many of the different cases and stories and true life encounters that our guest has dealt with. Have you come across reoccurring demons that you have either cast out somewhere else, or that rears its ugly head and pulls itself out and then appears again somewhere else, Ron? Or are each one of these possessions individual cases with different entities?
No, these guys, they keep coming back. They keep coming back for more. And as long as we allow them the privilege, they will continue to terrorize and attack people that are and whether they're conscious of the fact or not, this is a real scenario. Let me tell you, and let me try to explain to you how this process works. When a person has a genuine demonic possession, he or she will demonstrate all types of physical things that will take place, and there'd be no doubt that it's a genuine case. When an exorcism is actually done and performed and blessed by God, and when I say this, I'm talking about not the showmen who call themselves an exorcist. I'm not talking about the wannabes who are out there and probably doing more harm than good, and I'm sure that's the case in many cases. But if there's a true appointed exorcist who has been appointed by his peers and who's been appointed by his bishops and superiors and so on, this person was called to do just this and this alone. This would be his specialty. Okay, now, such a person would be in front of a person who is possessed by the demonic and begins the ritual and with earnest prayers, a series of prayers, until the demonic is actually battling and fighting, trying to resist any type of force that would be able to pull it out of that person. And as a result, there's an actual battle going on between the exorcist and the demon himself. The demon has, and each demon has their own personality. Each demon has a different take, a different way they react. You could actually profile a demon, and that demon could come back over and over again. When we perform an exorcism, we have aftercare services. We make sure that the person who has just been delivered agrees and at least makes their best effort to change their lives and perhaps maybe try to walk the straight and narrow and not do the things that they've done in the past that caused them to be in this situation of being possessed. So we try to encourage them to change their lifestyle, change their habits, change things in this nature. And the reason we do that is because when the demon is driven out of the person, the demon will roam and roam and roam and just totally lost. The demon would not know exactly where it's at, so it decides to go back to where it once knew, as its home, if you will. And in the process, this demon will take back other demons. And as a result, the other demons would accompany the original demon, and all these demons would go back. And if they found the house, that would be the body of the individual, if they found it clear and clean, and if the person is still behaving as they did, where the demonic would still be attracted, then that demon will not only repossess the person, but also will take other demons with it, and they will dwell in this house that they have just decided to be squatters. And as a result, these demons would be a multiple possession, a multiple demonic possession can take place in a person who has already been delivered but chose not to change their lifestyle and not to do the things that would prevent the demon from coming back. So the reoccurring possessions are very, 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 very real. And by the way, it's also scriptural. What I just said was also in the scriptures. It will tell you that the demon that is possessing the human being will be driven out through a series of prayers, and that demon will be roaming the deserts, lost and looking for a home. And as a result, it will come to its senses and say, well, heck, I'm just going to go back where I used to live, and I'm going to take other demons with me. This is all scriptural. This is in the scriptures. And as a result, they're driven to this, and this is what they do. So to be repossessed is very, very common and very likely if the victim is not willing to change their lifestyle. It's a real scenario.
Ron, just a curiosity, what if the reason these demons keep attaching to human forms is that they're trying to take a form that will allow them acceptance back into heaven at some point, connecting to a soul that will be allowable, allowed in?
No,
That's not a real scenario, unfortunately. The whole purpose of the demon and its behavior is to wear down and tear apart God's creation, which would be us human beings, and then drive us to a point where we'd want to do harm to our physical being. And as a result, our attention will be away from God and more into the momentum that the demonic would give you to destroy yourself. That's the whole purpose of the demonic being in existence. It doesn't want to go back to heaven. It's a fallen angel. It's been already exiled. It's been thrown out of heaven. As a result, Lucifer took these angels with him. You know, there's a whole rebel that was going on.
But if you were a strategist and you were the devil and you or Satan, Beelzebub, whatever you want to call it, and you wanted to create this havoc that would destroy what God has created, if you began by just waves of these people that are already mentally afflicted, then going after children that are so easily manipulated, and started causing mass suicides, mass attacks, mass or just horrific things going on, it would seem those would be the easiest pegs in the Jenga tower to knock out. And then what you have left is just a wobbly tower that's ready to collapse at any time. People questioning, where is God now? There is no God. Why is this happening? If you're taking the children and the weak and feeble out first, that's going to affect people. That's going to make them start questioning, which is exactly what the end game seems to be. Why just pick on a handful of people here and there? Why not just go after those weak links and start eliminating them? They've got to be the easiest to kill, the easiest to convince to take their own lives.
It's interesting, you know, everything you just said is a false narrative.
Okay.
That's not anywhere to what is actually happening in the world. This is one of the problems.
I understand that. I understand that's not what's going on.
Explain to you what I can tell you what's going on. Okay.
Sure.
In my humble view and my humble background and all this other stuff.
Sure.
Let me just explain to you what my inner belief system is, and this is what I truly believe.
Okay.
I truly believe that no one, and I mean no one alive, no human being knows the mind of the demonic. I believe no one knows exactly what the strategy would be for these dark forces to move in and attack. Understand, the cases that are occurring today have occurred 2,000 years ago, have occurred in the beginning of time. And as a result, no one truly could understand and truly understand the attack mode that Satan would use. Now, we have certain classifications for them. You know, we use the classification of demonic possession and then demonic oppression and demonic infestation. And we have these general classes, but the actual behavior and the mind of a demon, no human being can say anything that would be accurate to the truth. All we do know is based on their attacks and profiling the actual behavior, all we know is the victims are totally and completely torn apart from the inside out. This is where you start seeing physical manifestations take place. Discoloration of the skin can actually change. I was start to discuss with you a prior case I had many years ago where a person transformed from one gender to another, and not only that, but physically in size, a muscular from a lady, from a very petite lady, all of a sudden a transformation took place. It's like as if the lady turned her head for a second and then looked directly at you, and at that particular time simultaneously started to grow in stature at least 3 inches, and muscular tones started to occur. The shoulders became wider, and it changed its entire appearance from a female to a muscular male type of image. And you're watching this, and it's like watching, you know, do you remember the old Wolfman movies, you know, where you see the guy transforming, you know, and you see him slowly transforming into a wolf. Well, it was almost like that, but it happened so quick. It was like she turned her head just for a second, and then
quickly looked directly at you as she turned it again, and there was the change. It changed immediately. Then the personality and the voice was more of a exhaling heavily and very, the odor. There's a certain amount of body odor that is actually generated by the person who is possessed, and it's the only way you could describe it, gosh, I would think, is perhaps burning flesh. Okay, not to be real super graphic, but I will say that most people are not aware of what burning flesh smells like unless you're a war veteran, and you could probably remember the horrible, awful senses that the scent gives, burning flesh. But it smells the same as if, and I don't know if anyone has done this, they can, just for the effect. If anyone wants to really understand well how gross and how foul the odor is, try urinating on a campfire. Urinate on fire, and the urination will actually burn, the chemicals will turn, and then a sense will come out, and it's horrible. It's terrible. Now, try to imagine that, or if anyone's ever done that, I'm sure people have, try to imagine that in 10 times as gross, okay? The odor, the smell, and it's not just radiating from the body. When the beast inhales and exhales, there's a multitude of force that comes from within that beast, where you could smell the foulness, you could smell the nastiness, and sometimes it's so horrible that people that are in the room have to leave because it's so overwhelming. It's just unbelievable, and that's the smell. Now, at this point, the exorcist and the people who are assisting him, all of them and their senses are heightened. They're heightened to a point because there's a lot of things in play right now. There's fear, number one. Number two, anticipation. Number three, the unknown as to what's going to happen next. So all these emotions are going in at one time. And so everyone in the room is like sitting on the edge of their chair, and they're just waiting. There are many of them who are praying with their eyes closed because they don't want to see what's going to take place, at least visually. This is a horrific experience for not only the victim, but for the people who are trying to help. And as a result, every person that's in the room is affected. And not only that, but after everything is done and over, okay, and after the ritual and after, God willing, you're successful in doing what you set out to do, in the power of God and the power of Christ, and you're able to rid this demon from this person, this poor individual who has suffered physically and mentally, who has no strength whatsoever. And immediately after the demonic leaves, the exit of the demonic, the person, the victim, will all of a sudden inhale deeply, and then their color will come back almost immediately. And they'll be totally awake and not even aware, in most cases, as to what took place. It's quite interesting when you see it. Now, when you're there in the room and you're watching all this, you're taking it in, and you have all these emotions in play, and your senses are heightened. And when everything is over, you walk away, and guess what? The memories are still there. And you take away all the horrible things that you've just seen, all the things that maybe you've seen for the very first time and never thought was possible. And you're taking all these experiences away and walking away from the room with all these things. And believe me, the person's life is changed. They're transformed. Their perception of life has altered because of this traumatic experience of reality. The reality is that demonic entities, evil spirits, they all are true, and they do exist. And when you acknowledge and see it for the very first time, or the second time, or in my case, over 35 years, 36 years, I've done over 2,000 genuine rituals of exorcism. So taking all that with me, I have this residual effect that I call it. I have not only the horrible memories, which I have been successfully able to suppress most of these horrible, horrible nightmares, but the calling of people that I still receive. I still receive requests. I receive over 100 emails every single day, and I can't physically answer them all, but I do my best. I'm in front of this computer about 8 or 9 hours a day, and I'm retired, but I guess nobody believes it. But the point is, I'm driven. It's like I have to do something because it seems like, and believe me, I'm no one special. I'm no one important. But for some reason, these people over the years have come to me and asked for my opinion, and I am obligated to give it to them. I'm obligated to tell them and give them my input. Whether it's I like to think that it's, and maybe the reason is that there are not many people that are, you know, that sit where I sit. There are not many people that have the experience and the real genuine experience. I'm not talking about an internet thing. I'm talking about some physical interaction and years and years and years of witnessing agony. That's what an exorcist witnesses. He witnesses agony. He witnesses the human condition in its lowest form, in the form where there is so much pain and so much anguish. And sometimes, you know, your heart, I've always said this, and it's true in my case, I have been cursed with this thing called empathy. I feel the pain of others. So when I'm in a situation like this, believe me, I'm like right at the edge. I mean, I could lose it at any moment, and I feel myself physically, though I would never admit to anyone at that time while it's happening, but I will actually feel myself trembling inside. Not because I'm afraid. It's because I feel the emotions that this poor individual is going through, being tormented. And this torment could have been going on for days, weeks, years. And as a result, this poor thing has been tortured. I mean, physically tortured. When you see someone, and I'm talking about real life, face to face, falling apart, literally deteriorating from within, where something horrible, bestic, evil coming out from the paws of this poor individual, when you see that, you will never forget. You will never forget the scents, the smells. You'll never forget the people around you, the people who were there with you in the front line, the people who have either fell to the floor, who have died, who have left the room because of fear. There's so many things that occur. And as I said, the movies won't even come close to it. They might give you some entertainment in regards to the imagination of the writers, and they will probably try to, insinuate the or exaggerate the actual event, make it more entertaining. But the reality is, we're looking at a torture chamber. You're in the middle of a room, which is referred to as the ritual room, and it's actually a torture chamber. And the torturer is invisible because the torturer is not on the outside, but it's in the inside of the victim. And so it's torturing the poor individual, and you're seeing the pain of someone else. And it's horrible.
I know off air. Yeah, I can only imagine. And thank you for doing the work you've done for all these 40 years and the thousands that you've helped with this kind of ritual to rid them of these afflictions. I know you said you wanted me to remind you about a story from 1983, so I'll throw you that keyword and let you take it from there.
Yep. Okay. This is in the early 80s. We did our evaluations. And at that time, we weren't as sophisticated as we are today, but we did our preliminaries. We interviewed the individual, the history, and all this other stuff. So we did our due diligence in that respect. And then I was called to review the information, the assessment, to see whether or not
I felt it was a genuine case. And at that time, I have been, and I've always been like in a room full of skeptics. I'm probably the biggest skeptic. I'm like the guy that says, well, look, if this is real, I want to see it. I want to see it with my own eyes. I want to make sure that all the other reasons for what's happening is not, cannot be explained. If everything is happening and it cannot be explained and there are no other previous cases that even come close to it, then I definitely want to become involved. So I found myself with a team going into a Skid Row motel. In the Skid Row motel, behind the closed doors, and this building was literally dingy, and it's a Skid Row hotel, old hotel. We were led into the room by the manager of the hotel, and the manager was the first person that contacted our organization. And at that time, we were just a parish. I think we had a dozen parishes, and as a result, people were it was like word of mouth type of thing. Anyway, the manager contacted us, and as I entered the room, I started feeling these things. First of all, the room was very dark, and nothing sinister about that per se. It was dark because the lights were turned off. There was only one bulb in this whole room, it was a large room, and the girl was in the corner. She was completely, totally naked. She was bleeding. It looked like scratches in various parts of her body. She was dirty. She was sweaty. Her hair was all caked up with piles of gook, and she was just like crawled in the corner, and she was just there, and she was just like shivering, and the poor thing. And so I'm walking into this dark room, and I see her image there. And then all of a sudden, I started feeling things falling on my head, and I figured it was the plaster because, this is an old building, and the room is pretty old, And so as a result, it could be plaster, could be a lot of stuff. And so I had a fellow clergyman with me, and he said, we need to come into the hallway. And I said, well, we just entered the room. We have to start the process. He says, no, we have to go in the hallway. So we all decided to reassemble and go into the hallway. And as we're there, we noticed that what was falling on our heads were these little maggots. Roof, the whole ceiling was covered with maggots. And they were falling from the ceiling. And these things that I felt in my hair, and I felt right. them even wiggling when I think about it. And then I think about it now, I'm getting like goosebumps.
We just read a news story about that yesterday with maggots kind of falling from the sky and the ceiling. That is, ugh.
Oh, God, unimaginable. So we were very alarmed, to say the least. So I had to literally, and I'm not kidding, I had to take my jacket off and my shirt off, and I had to just, wring it out because it was like it just a whole bunch of them just dumped on us. We re-entered the room, and there she is again in the corner, and she stooped over, and she's eating something in the corner. And so it looks like she was eating something anyway. So we approached her, and at this point, we had the light on, but it was so dim that you could really see. You couldn't really see everything, per se. But, our guys always have these things called flashlights, so we had them on. And this girl turns around, and she's eating this thing. I thought it was a chicken or something, and that turned out to be a cat. She was actually consuming a dead cat. As a result, that was found for all the filth she had
right.
on her body was actually the remains of a cat. And all the internal remains were all over her, and so it just appeared to be globs of dirt and these globs of things on her hair. And what it was the cat that was being consumed. And immediately we went towards her, and she seemed to be very threatening. It was very, very threatening. And she like as if we were trying to steal her dinner. Okay, so she just lashed out, and with a very loud scream, I'm surprised the glass didn't break in the room. The scream was so loud you could hear it not only down the hall but probably all around the block. I mean, it was a loud scream. It was an unnatural scream. It was an unnatural sound. You see, the human vocal cords are very limited in regards to the sounds that we could actually make.
and in terms of the peak and how loud we could scream, she was so above normal that it could have shattered glass. So she just screamed, and I don't mean just an outburst for just a couple of seconds. I'm talking, she screamed for about 2 minutes. I have no idea if that's even possible. Probably isn't. But anyway, she just screamed for two, it was like a siren going off for two solid minutes. And it was, let me put it this way, it was something to be, I certainly took notice. It was a standoffish type of scenario where you didn't exactly know how to approach this type of scenario. The fellow clergyman that was with me, he was an old school, high school football coach at one time in his life. Very daring, and he said, "I'm going to go in there, and I'm gonna, you know, help subdue or whatever." And that was that had to be done. And as he approached her, she just, and I'm telling you, she's just a little girl, probably under 5 feet, and very skinny, filthy, dirty. And with her little skinny little arm, she threw this clergyman across the room. And I say across the room, I say at least 10 feet. And he was a pretty big guy. You know, he's about maybe 250 or so. And she just had no problem at all, just launching him in one direction, and he just landed like 10 feet away. And at that point, we all decided to call in some reinforcements because we needed some people strong enough to retain her and to hold her down and to try to go through this ritual. All the time we're doing this, these things started falling from the ceiling again. And so the clergyman that was with me decided to take a break because he wanted to shake off some of these things, these maggots off his hair and jacket and stuff. We're doing this, and we're being rained on by maggots. It's like unbelievable. It was explained later that these maggots came from dead animals that were in the room that she was eating, and they were just rotting. And as a result, the maggots decided to gather and up on the ceiling, and they just fell when we were present. So, but that's how it was explained.
Oh, so nasty!
Why there were maggots? It's horrible. Of course, you're dealing with the smells, you're dealing with the emotions, you're dealing with everything. And then my first concern is, well, you know, I don't want anyone to get hurt here, especially the people who are trying to help. And the clergyman that, as I said, he was a high school coach or something, a football coach. And he was new to the priesthood for only a couple of years. So he was pretty much fresh out of seminary. And so he didn't really fully understand. Well, I can't really say that, but sometimes it takes many years of this type of scenario for you to really understand and respect the type of approach you have to take when you're dealing with this type of situation. We did a ritual, and we were there probably for a week and a half. We had to come in, come out, come in. First thing we did is we had to get her washed and get her some clothes. We did that, and we tried to feed her. She wouldn't eat anything. She would take naps, and she would wake up. She'd wake up screaming with this siren of a scream she had, and then she would fall asleep again. She'd wake, sleep, and throughout the whole period that we were going back and forth, until we were satisfied that she was pretty close to where we hoped and prayed she would have to be. We transported her to a hospital. She had some major injuries that went on, but she was healthy, and she was clear from the demonic. She was clear from everything, and it's interesting because even the maggots seemed to like kind of disappear. And I don't know, I'd call it a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences, but for some reason, these maggots, they just seemed to just disappear. And the room was dark to begin with, and even with this one bulb, it was still pretty dim, but after the exorcism, after the actual ritual, the room, for some reason, just lit up. I mean, it was so much brighter. And I think that what happens is, and the reality is, that when the demonic is present, it has command of within the immediate area. It could control, or at least it seems that he's able to control the emotions of other people that are present. It is the demonic is able to read a person, tell personal history about a person, all the negative, of course, and it demonstrates unbelievable powers. Now, understand, demons who are fallen angels, they have been around from the beginning of time. They live outside time and space, so they could exist. They could exist from the beginning of time and just very casually walk through the chambers of time into our present. And when this occurs, interesting things can take place. I bring this up because I have a story to tell. This is another story. If we have the time.
Yeah, certainly. Please feel free.
Okay. What I had generally done when I was working, of course, now I'm retired, but when I was working, I was always in front of my computer and I was reviewing assessments. Now, we have members in Poland. We have members in the Philippines. We have members in third world countries even, and they submit their assessment reports along with video and any psychological reports. All these things are forwarded to my computer. And so I sit there and I review all the information. I go through their case history. I go through the questions and the answers of the questionnaire that we have and that we use in the first contact interviews. And so I do all this, you know, and I'm sitting in front of my computer. This is all I'm doing. I'm doing this for hours at a time, just making these evaluations. If I need a medical opinion, I would contact one of our psychiatrists and he would also read the same reports and he would give me his impressions. And if I agree with them, along with the physical evidence that I see, then I would suggest to the bishop of that jurisdiction that he should appoint or have one of his exorcists on team to actually perform the ritual with the team of investigators. And then I would give them the green light. Now, I'm reviewing this particular assessment that took place a month ago. Okay, and so understand, this is a month ago, and this assessment was done around the world. It was done, you know, on the other side of the planet. And I just now received the information. It's like a month old, and I'm reviewing the videotape, video feed on the actual assessment. And so I'm staring at my monitor, and I see things happening, and I see physical manifestations that are taking place, but so slowly, and it's very, very slow. And then all of a sudden, I see this black fuzz that just appeared out of nowhere, and it was on the left side of my screen. Now, at first, I thought, well, maybe it was the taping, and maybe the when they were video recording, maybe there was some kind of malfunction or something. So I was like, my first instinct is to explain things and try to reason as to why certain things appear to be what they are. Anyway, this black fuzz is on the far left side of my screen, and all of a sudden I see it actually move, and I'm going, wow. And again, I'm thinking, well, you know, obviously it's some kind of video feed, you know, malfunction or something. The fuzz moved from the left side of the screen slowly to the right side of the screen. I'm still watching this, and my eyes are moving along with this black fuzz that's going from one corner of the screen to the other. And then it started moving again, and it went dead centered. And from there, I'm looking at it. My attention is on that fuzz, and my face is literally maybe 6 inches from the screen. I'm just really trying to examine and find out what the heck that is. And all of a sudden, this black fuzz seems to come out of the computer, forcing to the back of the small of my chair. And
no.
It was like the force was so strong that it almost threw me off the chair. So this energy, whatever it was, came off the screen. Now, the way I view this, and by the way, I have probably close to 100 videos of real demonic activity going on. But this was very dramatic because what was taking place a month ago, understand, the demonic is outside of time and space. So they could walk in from one a realm of reality to another within a second. This is what happened. What happened was I was watching this assessment that was taking place a month ago, but the demonic, since it's not confined to time and space, decided to inject itself into the scenario, into the assessment, and then therefore attack me as I was sitting down, even though the event took place a month ago. So the demonic, again, being not restricted to time and space, came into the viewing screen, into my computer, and I'm watching it in real time as the demonic is actually being moved and it forced me back. Interesting enough, I went to the hospital because I had a bruise, and I wanted that bruise to be checked. Now, right. Understand, a few years ago, as I mentioned before, I was attacked and almost killed and in the hospital for a month or so. So I wanted to make sure that everything was okay because I saw this black and blue that was developing right where I was, where I felt the full impact of that energy. I went to the hospital. They did, because of my history there, they did a CAT scan. They did blood works, and they did a chest x-ray. And so I was waiting. I had one of the hospital gowns on, and I was sitting on a gurney in the hallway waiting for the results. And so I'm waiting for an hour or whatever it is. And as I'm waiting, the orderlies and the nurses, as they were passing me, they were kind of giggling, and they said, "Look at that guy." And apparently this bruise resembled a hand, as if it was a five fingers and a thumb. And as a result, and you know what, I've even posted this on Facebook. I posted the actual pictures and the images. I have pictures of it. Actually took place. And the bruises were on my side where I was first attacked a few years prior to that. The doctors came and they said they checked the x-rays, they checked the CAT scans, and even the blood work they did. And they couldn't find anything. They could not find anything, nor could they explain this perfectly shaped hand. Now, I started to tell you about the orderlies and the nurses that were passing the gurney as I was waiting for the test results. My gown was open and my chest was exposed, and you could see that handprint. And one of the hospital staff told the other one, kind of with a smirk, "Well, that guy must have been in a fight with Mike Tyson to leave that kind of impression on his body, you know?" And I said to myself when I overheard them, I said, "Boy, if they only really knew. I mean, the battle that we have is much more powerful than Mike Tyson or anyone else."
Right.
Because it can't be explained.
Do you ever, Ron, did you ever look at that stuff? Did you ever say, "You know what? I've had enough. Maybe I should go to become a shoe salesman."
No. This was a calling, and I've been doing this forever. My birthday is next month. I'll be 65 years old, so I'm an old guy. I've been doing this more than half my life, and I have so many cases. And I start to tell you, the case I just described to you as to the demonic coming right out of the screen, well, that type of assessment, the video assessment, I have about 100 of those, of real demonic images that are in the screen. We had a case where you could see, as they were interviewing, the first contact interview, the victim was sitting in the chair, and behind the person there was an evil, evil, dark image that was behind the person, and that was captured. And as a result, I find it quite interesting. You know, these are the images that are real. These are not, Photoshop. They're not they're not fakes. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people that will—they drive on attention and they will create things. And of course, that's where our assessments come in. We have to make sure it's genuine. We're not being, scammed or anything.
Right.
They're not doing it because we're trying to feed into their illusion or whatever. So this is what we do, and that's why we have this assessment. There's a whole bunch of things that are involved in just being an exorcist. It's not just a title. It's a lifestyle. It's a commitment. It's a commitment that you make, not to man, but to God. So that makes the commitment pretty strong. And as a result, based on your belief system, which should be pretty much in place,
Because when you're dealing with the supernatural, the invisible elements, okay, you have to make sure that you are secure enough to do what you're doing. And to do that, you have to prepare yourself. It's a lifetime of preparation. It's every single time you do it.
Right.
And it's not the 9-to-5 type of job. You know,
no,
you're doing
guess.
It and you're working like 24/7. And it's only now that I'm trying to kind of wing myself away from all of this. And I have been for quite some time now. But people will never believe it, of course, but it's true.
Well, when you're good at a job, Ron, they're going to keep trying to. It's like the mob, right? Every time you think you get out, they're pulling you back in again. Let me ask you. I know you had a few things, and we're almost at the end of our time here. I know you had said you wanted to mention something that you're up to now and that you're doing before we wrapped up, so I wanted to give you a chance to do that as we say goodbye here.
Okay. In everything in life, there's always a residual. There's a residual in everything you do in life. There's the cause and effect scenario that comes into play. But the residual of things that you've done in the past seem to follow you wherever you go. There are many times when my peak awareness, even though my hearing is not normal, I can still hear sounds that are just beyond my physical presence. And sometimes I could swear that I almost hear the sounds just above or just beyond the veil that covers us. And as a result, I could hear certain things, spiritual things. Sometimes I hear whispering, but unrecognizable, and you can't distinguish as to what's being said. And, of course, if someone said this to me, the first thing I would do as a professional profiler slash assessment person, I would probably say, well, okay, let's have a psychological evaluation, because it could be something that you're imagining or something that may be happening mentally. But I'm telling you that, and you have to believe me when I say this, I'm totally and completely normal. I mean, that is, I have no mental problems. You would probably think I should regards to everything that I've witnessed. but I'm probably one of the most healthiest people you will ever know. And maybe with the exception of being a little bit overweight, but, you know, most of America is overweight, so that's okay. But I still hear the sounds of the past. I still feel and sense the presence of spiritual things happening just around me and around my immediate environment. This is all part of the reality of where we are at in this world today. We are in a world not of just the physical nature, but we're in a spiritual world. And both are coexisting. And we, if we're open to it, we can actually sense and perhaps even see what's going on the other side. Something to think about.
It is. Thank you so much for the work that you've done over the years, Archbishop Ron Pfeil. Thank you for reaching out, helping people, and doing what you could to make this world a better place and rid people of the afflictions of these dark entities, energies, demons that are on them. And if you leave people in a parting way, what are two or three things people can do to make sure that they block themselves, to make sure that they're not prone to oppression or possession?
The very first thing, and of course this is from a Christian perspective, I would say get to know God. Get to have a relationship with Christ. Very important. If you believe in anything, believe in that, because evil does exist, and we are in the mix, and it could affect you if you don't do the proper things that you should do, at least in your spiritual life.
Those are great words to live by. Make sure that you're centered, you're grounded, you believe in something, and that you surround yourself with that good and that type of work. It's great to catch up with you, and hopefully we'll continue to do this from time to time. And I know it's, you know, usually 2 or 3 years in between visits. Hopefully we can shore that up a little bit more. But thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You know how to contact me any time, Dave.
I appreciate that. Hey, by the way, folks, don't forget, today is True Crime Tuesday. Deadly Betrayal, the true story of Jennifer Pan. the daughter from hell. That's our guest today. Alan Warren will be with us as we discuss this case, plus some dumb crimes and stupid criminals with Tim Dennis. So make sure you go subscribe to that right now. Go to darknessradio.com, click on the True Crime Tuesday banner, and never miss another minute of the best in True Crime Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Dave Schrader, and you've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. So it's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This is Julian Edelman from Dudes on Dudes with Gronk and Jules. Sunday mornings, I've got my game day ritual. Coffee, lucky socks, and now new morning Uncrustable sandwiches.
It's all about that 12-gram protein boost with the new Uncrustables Bright-Eyed Berry or Up and Apple flavors.
Bright-Eyed Berry's got a feisty receiver energy.
Up and Apple, your classic do-it-all tight end.
Soft, pillowy, packed with protein, and easy enough for Gronk to grab from the freezer.
Whether you're on the couch, driving to the tailgate, or heading to the locker room, new morning Uncrustable sandwiches are the MVP of snacks.
Your new Sunday kickoff ritual starts here with new morning Uncrustable sandwiches packed with 12 grams of protein.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.